Welcome to this episode of Tap Into College Golf. I'm your host, Brandi Jackson, founder of Brandi Jackson Golf, where young female golfers can come join the team in search of coaching, consulting, mentorship, and guidance on all things junior golf related and, of course, the college recruiting process. There's also access to an online course, or if you're looking for some fun girls golf lifestyle apparel, even added that to the collection last year. So be sure to go check out www.brandijacksongolf.com. That's Brandi with an I. Welcome everybody to another episode of Tap Into College Golf. If you're listening during, you know, present day time right now, I know we're all in a little bit of a, you know, interesting time right now where there's no sports going on. College seasons got cut short, no junior golf going on. So I know a lot of people are listening in right now. You may be a little late listening to this. It may be a year from now when you're hearing this, but right now, you know, we're in the midst of this coronavirus going on and a lot of changes, which there's a positive side to it in the fact that a lot of college coaches right now are finding themselves with some free time with, you know, after kind of having to face a little bit of a tough end of the season, which we're going to talk about a little bit with the coach that I have on today. But, you know, a lot of them are finding themselves with a little bit of free time, which is great for me because I'm fortunate to have some come on with me right now and have a coach on today that, you know, I've known off and on through our playing career all the way back to, I had kind of forgotten about this, back to both of us being quarterfinalists at the U.S. Women's AM back in 2002. So we may talk about that a little bit and that experience. But thanks for joining. I have the University of Florida women's head coach, Emily Glaser. Did I say that right?
Yes. Okay, you got
perfect.
It.
So thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking me, Brandi.
Awesome. Well, let's dive in. Like I said, I remember back to that, like I said, that USAM might have been one of the first times our paths crossed a little bit. And then we both really kind of overlapped during our play-in days of both Symetra and LPGA Tour from that 2003-ish to 2010 range. And then I know you went on into coaching from that point and led into doing this. We've kind of kept in touch, but talk a little bit. You played at Michigan State. Tell us a little bit just about your path into coming out of play-in and getting to coaching. Was that something that you knew you wanted to do? I know you had a great collegiate career and professional career. So let's kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I've always feel like my path into coaching was pretty unique. You're right that I have a playing background, played professionally for about 6 years out of college. And so to be honest, when I knew that I was sort of over professional golf and kind of wanted a different lifestyle, I actually thought I was going to go to law school, and I was living in North Carolina, with my now husband, and I was studying for the LSAT. I really thought that's what I wanted to do. And while we were in North Carolina, the assistant coaching job at Duke opened up, and it's Duke, right? So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll just go check this out, you know, see what this is all about. And, you know, at least I'll spend a day with Dan Brooks and, you know, check out campus and things like that. Well, long story short, he offered me the job after an interview. And so I worked for him for a year there in Durham, and that was kind of how I got my feet wet with coaching. And so I ended up moving back to Florida. I was the assistant coach at Florida for a year before getting promoted into the head job. And so I guess this is 8 seasons later as the head coach at Florida, here I am. So I always feel like that's kind of a unique story, and I feel like although it wasn't exactly the path I thought I was going to go down, I'm certainly grateful for it now.
Yeah, that's great. That's been one of the interesting things I think that I guess I had not really thought about, because all of us, especially as players, you know, for most of us, our paths were thinking about playing and college golf out on tour. And you don't really think a whole lot to the next stage when you're doing all that. And I know many of us who were in that kind of same path didn't. What we ended up doing was a little bit of just kind of coincidence, fell in your lap, and then all of a sudden you just kind of fell in love with it. And then I have had a few coaches who, you know, have said, you know, even if they played collegiate golf, they kind of knew they wanted to get into the coaching group pretty early on, and that was the plan. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, to kind of know this, especially having known some of you all back during the day of playing, and like I said, how how different it all kind of played out for everybody and what we were all kind of thinking about back then. It's interesting. But you, I mean, you did. So maybe, I mean, since you did, you know, obviously had, it had a great collegiate career, great professional career. How have you been able to take that into the coaching world? I know there's a balance there of using your experiences and then having that, but yet also knowing that everybody learns different and everything. How have you been able to kind of find that balance of your playing days and what you did and you learned with having to teach everybody so different and individually?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, I think having a playing background sort of gives me some credibility with my players. You know, that certainly set the bar and that's been helpful. but I always felt like as a player, one of my strengths was, you know, I always felt like I was a quick learner. You know, you're certainly going to make a lot of mistakes in golf, but I always felt like I could adapt and learn quick. And so I really tried to take that strength into coaching as well. And there is no doubt that, you know, my first couple years at Florida, especially being at a place like Florida and that being your first head coaching job, it was overwhelming. And I made a lot of mistakes. But again, I felt like as long as I can learn from these mistakes and adapt and keep getting better, I think that, you know, I have a shot to be successful at this. So even though it's you know, certainly golf is the common denominator between the two, I do think some of those skill sets that you have, whether it's as a player or in your character, you know, kind of transfer into the job of coaching as well. And that's really what I've tried to keep, you know, doing, is making sure that I'm learning and growing and getting better, just as I would if I was still, you know, playing golf for a living.
Gotcha. Yeah, I do. I think that's something that I think we all kind of have instilled in us, even though I was not, talk about a lot, the most disciplined, structured kind of player. I do think so much of what we knew as players, it's what helps make more successful, whether you're coaching or you're in the real world and you're in the business. You do have this tendency to always be wanting to learn and always wanting to get better and kind of never settling. And I think you have that expectation for players, but also as yourself. I think that's one thing that I've definitely heard very consistent among many of the good coaches, you know, just that constant thrive to want to get better yourself, and knowing that that's going to, you know, help your players, but just that natural mindset for sure.
Yeah, you have to. This isn't a static business. You know, things are changing. The people coming into your program are changing. The information is changing. You know, even the way kids are growing up now is different than when you and I were growing up. So you do have to be able to adapt all that.
Exactly. Well, we're in a major time of adapting right now. So let's just kind of touch on that a little bit. As I kind of said, I like trying to, we talk about some serious stuff on here and some, you know, in-depth stuff, but like to try to keep this light, but also do, you know, we are all in the midst of this kind of crazy time. And one of the things that got affected the most, although in a small scale compared to some of what the world's going through right now, but college athletics was a big part and kind of one of the first really big hit organizations when the coronavirus, you know, outbreak started. And obviously college golf was very much impacted. Season gets cut short. I know you all, I think, had just won your home tournament and had won a tournament right before that. So you're, you know, I know that spring season, it's just so much fun, so much energy. I know some teams were on their way to tournaments. And, you know, all this just kind of comes crumbling down and the season ends. How was that for you all as a team? And how was it, you know, as a coach having to, you know, go through this with the team? You know, share a little bit of light on that and just kind of how y'all have been able to move forward from that and kind of focus on the future and what you're doing.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously the timing is never right for something like this. And as you said, we were kind of coming up, we were coming off back-to-back wins. So you felt like you were building some momentum in your spring season, which as a coach is, you know, right where you want to be. And, you know, then we get the news and it happened fast. I mean, it was like every day there was new information that was changing the way we were going to do things. And I think initially, you know, my job as a coach is to, you know, I tried to make sure that my players had the information, that they were prepared, that they were safe. You know, these are all the things that are kind of going through my mind. And then after that, after we went to online classes and then players started to go home, we were, we actually have two players on our team from Italy and Spain. And so we were, you know, trying to get them home and flights were being canceled. I mean, it was a little bit of a little chaos there. And so I'll say it's only really been probably in the last, I don't know, maybe 3 to 5 days that it's, I think it's kind of hit me, you know, like we're not playing more golf for a while. And so I've sort of feel like this a little bit of detox and I think the emotional part is starting to, you know, hit me a little bit more. We're just trying to do a good job of staying connected as a team, you know, checking in with each other, whether it's, you know, texting or Zoom calls or just making sure that everybody is, you know, okay, that everybody's getting through this emotionally and handling that part of it, because everybody's going to be a little different. You know, I have some players who are pretty pragmatic about it and understand. And then, you know, others, especially I would say our seniors who know that, that really could have been the end of the road. I think they're dealing with, you know, some different emotions. So we're just trying to be mindful of all that and support each other during this time. We will get to a place, I think, where we start to, you know, kind of, focus on how we can get better during this time and, you know, work on some skills like that. I don't know that we're quite there. I think everybody's just kind of decompressing. But certainly that'll be the next step.
I know. I know it's been a big talk and we've talked about it. I've talked to all of my girls that I've got kind of across the country of, you know, how are you going to get better through this? But I've also tried to be kind of the same thing, even though not a college coach, I kind of feel that way sometimes to all of my girls in that sense of, you know, kind of trying to tell them it's okay. Like if, you know, have a little bit of that kind of pity party for a little while, if you were, especially if you're in the heart of recruiting and you had tournaments coming up, some girls had visits coming up and I know it was, you don't want to downplay it. You don't want to make them think it's not a big deal. When at the end of the day, it, you know, it is a small, small part of what we're going through, but it is such a big deal to them. And I said, trying to let them kind of decompress it without just pushing and saying, all right, we just, you know, you got to push forward. But it's like you said, there is a point where you do have to kind of start thinking, you know, thinking about the future. And everybody kind of has, I think, definitely different ways of, you know, and I think, again, that's just the individuality of the sport. Some people need a little more time before they can kind of shift gears and be okay with things. Others can kind of put stuff behind them and ready to get started, ready to get back on the, you know, what they can be doing. So I guess a lot of that, you know, as coaches, it's enough doing that during normal time periods. But then when this happens and there's more emotions, it probably even shows some of those tendencies and personalities a little bit more and having to treat everybody a little bit different. And like you said, even players who are going back to different countries that are affected in different ways by this, you know, I'm sure that's totally different, you know, with that for sure.
Yeah, you're exactly right on all of that. So,
all right. Well, I said, I know, again, I know we're all in this midst of this kind of crazy time, but let's, you know, talk a little bit about just the, you know, some of what you do see, you know, with your players that have been some of the successful things that you see be kind of, you know, I know you're finishing up your eighth season there at Florida. So in some degree, still kind of early into coaching career, but at the same time, I'm sure 8 years plus your assistant position and playing, you do see a lot and you've seen a lot for what it takes to be successful in some of those traits. What are some of those things that you've seen and some of your players that kind of stand out that some of the junior golfers might can learn from out there for moving forward and getting ready to play college golf?
Sure. You know, I think the big one that stands out for me is if I have a player who is a self-starter and who is intrinsically motivated, I think I know that I, you know, I have a real chance to help this player be successful. You know, the flip side of that is if you have a player who you're obviously, you know, if you're begging them to practice or you are having to be the one that motivates them, that just adds another layer of, kind of an obstacle to being great, in my opinion. So, certainly I think in the players that we've had that have been the most successful, you know, they're the ones that are, you know, really motivated to do a lot of it on their own. And then we provide as coaches, this sort of support staff that really, you know, just kind of points them in the right direction and can support them and give them new ideas and feedback and things like that. So I think for me, that's one of the biggest ones. It's obviously if I had a magic wand to weed that out in recruiting, I would always do it. It's a little bit obviously more complex than that. Because the joke I always say is everybody's on their best behavior in the recruiting process. So you really have to try to get to know, I think, the players in the recruiting process to get your best feel for that. And on the flip side of that, players looking for coaches on that too, you know, coach is going to say the right things and of course everything's going to sound great. So it's, you know, junior golfers need to ask, I think, direct questions about, you know, how programs handle conflict and how they handle tough things. And I think that's going to give you a better sense of what the overall picture is going to be like while you're there. So, but certainly back to your original question, self-starter is a big one for me. I think being organized is helpful. Also because you're busy as a student athlete. And your coach and the people around you on campus are going to sort of help structure your life. But if you can find your own level of organization within that, I think that also really helps. And to me, it just, what you're doing is kind of building this framework for how you're going to get better. And so if your base is really strong and the things at the bottom of, you know, imagine you're building a house, if your foundation is really strong, you're going to be able to, I think, go farther than people who are trying to manage all of that while trying to get better at golf.
Yes, yes. And I think what you said, I think a lot of kids can relate to it who are out there. I know for what I do with helping the players, just like I said, everybody's on their best behavior during the recruiting process. And that does go both ways, both coaches and junior players. And, you know, you want to tell people what they want to hear and you want to make it sound great. And especially if a coach really wants a player or vice versa, that player really wants to be there. Even though not all kids at that stage understand the dating scene with it, but it's a lot of what it's like, you know, it's kind of early on and you're going to, you know, try to make your best impression and really try to get somebody to like you. And then as you settle in that, you know, that can always shift one way or another. And sometimes it's not something you could predict anyways. You know, I think girls get to college and they didn't necessarily expect their tendencies to go a certain way, or, you know, maybe they expected to play and when they're not, you know, they gravitated more to a social side of things and they couldn't have predicted that. I've definitely seen some outlying situations that you weren't expecting to happen. But just like you said, asking some of the direct and tough questions are very important and really trying to make your decision based off of that. Because just like you said, it's when you've got coaches with high expectations of players, you know, it's tough to come in when you're not willing and ready to make that commitment and be that player that coach is expecting you to be. It's just a constant conflict, if not, because you're there as a coach to guide and direct, but not to, I think a lot of players expect to just change so much over the 4 years. And I think they think their golf game's just all of a sudden going to make this huge drastic change and get so much better. And you do, but you've got to have a good foundation for that before you even step foot on campus. Because in a lot of ways you only have so much time to get better and work and get into play and do those things. 4 years goes by really fast. But I don't think they realize that.
Yeah, it really does. We say that a lot. If you think of the scheme of your life or even your golfing life, the microcosm of time, the 4 years that we have to work with these players is small.
Yeah.
And so you're not able to do it all sometimes in 4 years. And so as coaches, I think part of our battle is to pick and choose those battles wisely, you know, to really maximize the potential of each player.
Yes. Well, I know this might throw you a little off because it's not something, any of the questions I gave you, but it is something I see a good bit of. I know you as a coach probably hear it. You know, everybody talks about being a late bloomer and, you know, because they weren't as good as seventh and eighth grade as some of these superstars were, or, you know, they just not till junior year and they feel like whether they missed out in the recruiting process or they want to be that walk-on spot and they really, you know, they know that their best golf is yet to come. And I 100% respect the outlook on that. And, you know, there are truly those late bloomers and good athletes and all those that pick up the game late or whatever it might be. What are some things to kind of maybe distinguish if you see a player like that? And you know, most all coaches are willing to take, you know, one, occasionally two players in different situations where you do have a couple of those players who come through the program. What are some things that maybe you see in true late bloomers that you can maybe feel like they can make enough of an impact on a team if they get there? Is there anything that maybe stands out a little bit for, like I said, for some of those that want that higher level? They know they're stretching themselves a little bit that maybe they can, you know, help help advise them as to whether that might be the right move, or if they just kind of have to understand that, you know, the process is going to kind of play out the way it is and not stress themselves too much.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think most coaches are probably really like that type of player. However, you can't have a team of them, yeah. Correct? So yes. You've got to, you know, you're looking for, you know, maybe the addition, like you said, of one to two to a roster that, you know, the term we use is everybody's kind of running their own race. So each player on the team is kind of on their own track, so to speak. And some people are going to cross the finish line at different times. And that's, I think, what you want overall in a program. As far as what traits those might be, I think you're always looking for them to be sort of, they still have to have a strength. You know, I think that for some, the obvious ones are, say, a kid who's really big and strong, you know, and they hit the ball a long way and you see that there's some upside there. Or maybe you have someone who just is totally going to outwork everybody. You know, if you're the late bloomer and you're starting on a program like that, but you're only working as hard as everybody else, it's probably going to be hard to get ahead. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's an elite student, you know, someone who you know is going to bring a lot to your team because school's going to be, I don't know, relatively easy, and they're going to be able to have, you know, spend time doing other things, something along those lines, or they're just going to set the academic bar for your team. Some other things, you know, might be a great personality, someone who has natural leadership skills, you know, those types of things. There's certainly, I think, a lot of merit to all those things, but you probably, if you're going to fit into that mold of maybe a late bloomer type kid, you probably have to let the coach know what one of those strengths is. You still have to have something to bring to the table, because I will tell you, we coach our number one player on our team just as hard as we coach the number eight player on our team. You know, we're not looking to have a huge gap there. Maybe in scoring average sometimes there could be, but that eighth player really has to bring value to our team. That's still very, very important, I think, if you want to be successful and have a successful environment, you know, where everybody's kind of marching towards the same goals. So, you know, those are the types of things that I think we look for, and maybe those kids who fill in more of a smaller scholarship or a walk-on type of role.
Exactly. I think that does hit a lot of those points, and talking about those strengths. I think one of the toughest things you run into in girls golf is you've got so many good academic girls out there. I feel like that is it's a great thing. I get a lot of parents and players which is really good academically, which is awesome. I love that's such a majority of girls out there playing, but you do, because I think that's one of the very unique things about golf is so many of those traits, the leadership, the work ethic, all of that. You do get that with a lot of girls, and because they I think that's what it takes to be even just an average golfer, and trying to let those coaches know that, you know, you possess those things and are strong enough above, you know, any other candidate out there is so important. And then, so I said, at the end of the day, when you get there, you got to be willing to back it up and then continue to do that. And even when you're not playing, have that same leadership or work ethic or whatever it might be.
That's right.
When you're not playing for a year, maybe even the second year, and know that you've just, if you commit to that path, you might be committing to, you know, a year or two of not being able to compete very much, and be willing for the to be there for the long term of that. And know you've got to be impatiently patient in a way, I guess, of yes. working hard, but yet being patient at the same time. So
that's right.
Good, good, good. Like I said, it's something that kind of just popped into my head that continue just to get. And so some insight like that is super, super beneficial. Well, let's hit on a couple. I think I told you before we started, I wanted to try to, you know, maybe highlight some of the fun things, some of the things that I think some of the junior players, just the maybe less important parts of the college golf side of things, but I think it can be very beneficial. But what are, first let's maybe start with a lot of people love the funniest story that's happened, you know, through your coaching days, you know, whether it's something the team has done, something individual, something through recruiting. What's a story or an incident that stands out to you is just kind of one of the funniest things that's happened during your coaching days, or maybe even as a player as well?
Sure. I know. And I knew you were going to ask me that one, because I don't know that I could come up with one thing. Like, I think there's so many
That's great. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Nuances, right? There's so many different things. And the thing that is so cool about college golf to me is that the funny story I would tell you, that's the joy of being on a team, right? Is like, if my team was here and I told the story, we would all be rolling on the ground laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like your inside joke of your team. I will say that, you know, but I do, even though maybe I can't come up with something specific, I do want to impress upon everyone that college golf is, and being a college athlete in general, it's really fun. Like that's, you know, I had an awesome experience at Michigan State. I know you had an awesome college experience. It's why we are still involved in this capacity in college golf, because it's really, really fun. Like it's supposed to be fun, you know? And so that's what, just what I want everybody to know is that, you know, like, of course there are struggles and, you know, I mean, and people want to win and it's competitive and all those things, but it's also really fun. There's just so much more to, I think, to the experience. And it's the things, you know, that I know you and I would think about when we look back at our college experience would be, although we're doing less of it these days, you know, we used to have a lot of van rides. We flew a little, but like van rides to tournaments. Yes. I mean, you know, those were always the most fun. And we've had a couple of those. I think, you know, we have one of those Mercedes Sprinter vans. And I do remember coming home from Charleston a couple years ago, this kind of popped into my head that we were, you know, you're driving back after a long round of golf and it was really hot and everybody just wants to be home. You know, you're kind of like going a little cuckoo probably in the van. Yeah. And the girls are playing some like techno music and it's helping me because I'm awake, you know, and I'm driving the van and everything, but everybody starts singing. I mean, and when I say singing, it's like you're in the club singing, you know, I mean, it was like really over the top. And Janice is our associate head coach, Janice Olivencia. We're singing too. I mean, everybody was involved, you know, just kind of like the home stretch of coming home. Those are the types of things that, you know, it's sort of that you had to be there a little bit, but at the same time, those are the memories that I know my players will take with them, you know, moving forward of the relationships that they're building and those types of fun times that they're able to have, the cool places they're able to visit, you know, just all of the perks of being a student athlete it's really, really fun.
For sure. Yeah, it is. And I know it's a different experience for everybody. There's different avenues for it. There's, you know, different divisions, different sizes and all of that, but there's so much benefit to it. And it's like you said, there's tough days. There's days you're going to want to quit and there's days you're not going to want to be there, but those types of things and having that team and just those experiences 100% are so much of what makes being a student athlete and playing so worth it. You know, like I said, just the good times at the end of the day and the harder you work and the more you do things and the more those moments get to, you'll get to happen and you get to kind of enjoy them a little bit more for, you know, for what they are. So that's, and I said, and I've always, the funniest stories have always been interesting because kind of same thing. I have some coaches who just have this one that just stands out or even some that were from a recruiting day and then others, it's just experiences as a whole, you know, which is, I don't think one is better than the other by any means. I think it's just, like I said, it just sheds some light on the fun, more entertaining, just easy, enjoyable side of playing college sports, because I think the junior players and parents do get so wrapped up in it that they forget of, you know, and then I think it's a little bit of a shock when the girls get there and it's very overwhelming and just somewhat easing their mind. Right. There's going to be a lot of good times. You just kind of got to push through to give yourself that opportunity to do it and get there. And then the experience and everything you're going to have are just going to be so worth it. Yeah, well, and talking about kind of road trips, this is one that I know some girls have enjoyed here. And what are some of the favorite places you like to, everybody likes to go eat? Same thing. I've had some who say they like going to local spots and then others who have that, whether it's a chain restaurant or just that one place that they always search out. What are some of the favorite places to eat and, or some of the, you know, on course snacks, superstitious kind of things with food, that your team likes?
Well, I'll start with the snacks. You know, snacks have come a long way.
Oh, God,
since,
yes.
I remember going to like junior tournaments and I think my snack was like a Snickers bar or something know what I mean? Like, and so I always kind of chuckle to myself that, you know, my players at Florida are pretty good eaters. And so they're not eating the fruit snack, cracker stuff. Yeah. You know, they're just not into those things. They, you know, we are making trips to Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, and we're getting things that are healthy, that are, you know, that are good for them. And, you know, if I've got a lot of players who want to play at the next level and they're paying attention to those details. And so, you know, that's part of my job is to say, I will support you in that. So we do, I think, you know, spend a lot of time, but snacks are also important, you know, like this is our, we joke that our, you know, that our world kind of revolves around when we're going to eat next. So, so we keep, you know, and maybe your golfers kind of know this, but so at any tournament, a coach generally has what we would call a coach's card. And so they're going to load a lot of their player stuff, as you know, on the card, whatever. And so we keep snacks on there and we'll see them. You know, they usually pass through every 3 to 6 holes or something like that and load up and keep things in their bag. So it's a lot of, you know, a lot of fruits and things like that. And a lot of, you know, protein stuff. So we're not getting sugar spikes and things like that. A little bit of Gatorade, a lot of water, you know, stuff like that. They're pretty healthy, which is impressive. We have a good nutrition staff at Florida that kind of, you know, helps guide them on those things. So anyway, snacks have come a long way. We're not eating Snickers bars anymore.
I used to eat marshmallows. I think I said this on an episode that it somewhere my mom brought. I did not grow up in the healthiest nutrition, you know, upbringing by any means, and just as much on me. But I mean, you had the hot dog at the turn. You had, you know, Snickers. It was, sodas. You didn't even think about what you were eating. And I can remember one day I played well and I'd had marshmallows that day. So it became a thing. I would eat an entire bag of just like mini marshmallows. And it just was superstition thing. Then it got a little better each progression through. But even early on for us playing on tour, I mean, it was, you pretty much lived off of peanut butter and bananas and bread. Yeah. And, you know, while that was a little bit better, you still didn't have nearly the accessibility to, I'm a huge snack queen. Everybody gives me a hard time. I love just always having snacks and nutritious things because I'm always hungry. And I don't know if it's about being a golfer and the fact that you're going to be out on a golf course, you know, from a 6 to 8 hour time span between getting there and warming up and all that, that you've got to think about what you're going to eat during that time. And I don't know if that's just the mentality and mindset of some golfers of always having snacks and always thinking about food and when you're going to eat it's again. And, you know, it's, I feel like I've been living that my entire life, I feel like, and some other people don't seem to understand that. Yeah. So maybe it's a golfer's thing.
It might be. We are definitely like that. And as far as restaurants, I think we're a little more maybe on the foodie side. We like to find a local spot if we can. But I do appreciate about my team, you know, they're always trying to balance, you know, say, especially on a 36 hole day, but they're trying to balance, you know, doing schoolwork on the road at tournaments and things like that. So sometimes we'll do takeout, you know, and go back to the hotel, they can shower, get their comfy clothes on, and we'll go get takeout and we can hang in the lobby. And so it's kind of a combination depending on, you know, probably the time of year and how much schoolwork they have and if they're exhausted or not. You know, we try to go out, I would say at least once or twice every tournament that we go to, but it's definitely not a huge production every night of getting showering, getting dressed up and going out. You know, they're busy and they're trying to balance a lot of things. So we try to be mindful of that too.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it is. I know a lot of times, like I said, by the time you're done playing, as much as food sounds good, the thought of having to go sit down and go through all that, sometimes you do, especially if you've got work to catch up on all that. It's just, you just want to go sit in the hotel and be comfortable and relax and, you know, not have to think about, you know, going to sit down and have a full on dinner or anything. I can 100% relate to that for sure. I'm sure many junior players can out there after those long days. Right. And like I said, just wanting to just go chill. So awesome. Well, let's talk about a couple more things and then we'll kind of wrap this up and let you get on to your day. But what, you know, one of the things I know that junior players struggle with a little bit, and college players obviously have the advantage of having, you know, having the coaches there and having somebody there with them every day for practice, and not always just dictating everything that they do, but being able to set things up, being able to help see them play, and then, you know, kind of create things for them based on their strengths and their weaknesses and mm-hmm. and drills and really being able to track things and keep it competitive. That's the one thing that I do think junior players mm-hmm. don't get on a regular basis that collegiate players get, that sometimes for players going into college is a little overwhelming when they realize that, like, it's constantly sure. just competing in that grind that for junior golf you just don't quite get when you're practicing, you know, on your own or maybe just with a parent. But what are some things you all do as a team, or even some things that you might, you know, think that junior players could learn from that, whether it's drills or just some advice on that practice side of things, that, you know, that you all do as a team that, like I said, even maybe some of the junior mm-hmm. players might could pick up on?
Yeah. So I think a little bit what I would implore junior golfers to do is really try to know yourself. You know, how much structure do you need or want in your practice? It's one thing that we have, what I like about how we do it at Florida is we're pretty liberal with that. So we do have team practice. We have kind of different types of practice. So we'll have a practice where everybody has to be there at the same time, but we give them a lot of freedom that particular day on what they want to work on. Then maybe another day we have, everybody has to be there, let's say at the same time, but we're going to set up drills as a coaching staff, and mandate what they do. And I will say 95% of the time that's, you know, we're talking 100 yards and in type of stuff. You know, I've yet to have someone tell me their short game is too good. You know, I don't need to practice yeah. that, coach. I'm really, my short game yeah. is set. Okay. So we're always going to be working on that. Learning new shots and, you know, trying to perfect our craft when it comes to that. And like you touched on, that's when we're going to be pretty competitive. We're going to set up yeah. things that try to simulate on-course stuff, raise your blood pressure a little yeah. bit, you know, put you under the gun, those types of things. We're going to do that. And then sometimes we are going to give some space on a day where, you know, maybe practice is required, but they have some flexibility if they want to, what time they want to come. We got people who like mornings or afternoon, you know, based around their class schedule, of course, yeah. but they have a little more flexibility, and that's probably balanced in there with playing a few times a week, of course. But I would just tell junior golfers to try to set something up similar, you know, days I think you're going to want to go to the golf course and maybe see where your practice leads you. You know, you can have some really good practice days like that where maybe mm-hmm. you didn't know it was going to be a great day, but all of a sudden it's like 3 hours later and you're really accomplishing something. But I would also have days where you go there with a goal in mind, whether you've looked in a book or you've gotten online or you've gotten some sort of a drill or, you know, maybe a few drills that you're going to go and try to accomplish, and you're not going to leave until you accomplish, you know, your goal for that day. I think having some structure a few days a week doing that is important. I'm a big proponent of playing. I think anytime you can get on the golf course, to me, it's positive. Even if you're getting on the golf, maybe you're lucky enough to be able to go on the golf course and practice short game, you know, only yes. go to different greens or do things like that. Like, to me, that's some of the best practice. To be able to get on the course and hit multiple shots and do yeah. things like that. So I do think mixing it up is important. And we still see that at the college level where, you know, a grinding 4 hour practice, even at the college level, I've got players who would have a hard time with that. It's just not, some of them aren't wired like that. It's, yeah. it becomes boring. It's overwhelming, you know, things like that. So the other thing we'll try to tell those types of players to do is if they're trying to get reps in, but they're finding that it's hard, break it up into, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, do 20 minutes where you're really focused on what you're trying to do, and then take a break where you go to get some water or you do something. You know, or again, another player might be doing 30 minutes. A lot of times what we'll do with that is that means no phone. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like 30 minutes where you're really like focused in on what you're trying to do, and then give yourself a break where you go check your phone and go to the bathroom or whatever. And so break it up like that, and you'll be amazed if you can do that. The time will fly and you'll be so much more productive than just kind of looking at the overall picture of, oh man, I really think I need to stay out here for X amount of hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think everybody wants to hear. I've even had, you know, parents ask, you know, what should the practice look like? How many hours? And I always just want to say it's not so much about the amount. You can go out there and waste 4 or 6 hours, especially during the summer when kids are practicing all day. You can go out there and have a complete, you know, not waste of time, but maybe get in an hour quality practice, but be out there for 6 hours. Or you can go out there and be out there for 2 hours and get in 2 quality hours if you know what you're doing, you know how to do it, and not so much make it about the length of time. And just like you said, everybody's different. We were that way on our team, where I was definitely the kind of scatterbrain, not disciplined, not focused type of practicer. There's no doubt about it. But we had a couple of them who could just hit golf balls for 2 hours working on things. And for me, you give me about a 20, 30 minutes of a range session and work on something. And then I needed to move on to something else. So I kind of needed that constant change. But you had girls that could just, we had a couple that were, you know, and maybe we all needed to learn a little bit from each other sometimes, but still know what you're, what makes you work and how you work best, because everybody's going to have different focus, different attention spans with it, you know, different ways that they approach their practice, that it's, it is so much about the quality over quantity, 100%, I think, when it comes to practice time and the juniors understanding that, like I said, it's tough, but because their quality is very much dictated by themselves and by what they do, and they don't have somebody kind of helping that, which I know that makes it a little bit tougher. Would love, I've always wanted to have a good girls program and was actually getting ready to do it here in the spring of creating some of that. And then all this happened, you know, just to give them a little bit of that kind of structure and, you know, help them kind of understand what true kind of practice like that was. But
yeah. And I think those are good questions to ask when you're on a visit, you know, how do coaches, because everybody's a little different. I kind of gave some insight into what we do, but I've been other places and things are different. So those are types of questions, you know, that you'll want to ask and get some feel on how coaches handle that and then where you think you'd fit in that spectrum.
Yes. Very good point. Yeah. You do, you get some really good, I think everybody thinks every good program has all this structure and discipline to it, but I know some coaches that even some of the higher ranked programs where they're a little more laid back and you actually have more practice on your own and they're not always even there and it works for them. And then you get some who even go to some of the lower rank, lower levels and thinks that it's going to be easy. And you get coaches who are very dictators of what you do and when you're there. So it's not necessarily just a rankings, big D1, small D1, D2 kind of perspective with that. It's just coach personality with that a lot of times.
You're right.
Good point. Very good point. All right. One last thing I want to talk about and then we'll kind of wrap this up. But I know we end up with a lot more parents out there listening in probably than the girls. I do have a lot of girls that listen, but obviously a lot of parents out there seeking advice, and wanting to, you know, help best prepare their daughters, who may have some with male players listening in as well, but really help prepare them for that. And even, you know, a little bit of understanding how the parent situation is in college golf. So kind of touch a little bit on both of those, just in terms of the parents out there, junior players, and then maybe a little bit of how you, I know, again, that's a big variable within the college world of how college coaches relationships with parents are once you get there too. So just a little bit of that kind of overlap of those two and talk about that a little bit. And then we'll wrap this up and go on with our day and with the rest of this, the strange time that we're living in.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, as a parent, I am a parent. So I think of a 4-year-old. So my perspective changed about 4 years ago when it came to, parenting and, you know, how we involve them in our program. And the thing I always tell my players is no one is going to love you like your parents love you. You know, it's, and that is the fundamental basis of parents and how they're involved in the process. They certainly want what's best for their child. And I can certainly understand that. And I think we take the approach of partnering with parents. I think it's, you know, again, they are going to know their child better than I do when their player comes onto campus. So, I think I would be silly to say, oh, now it's just me and just our coaches and everything you knew before this is not important. So we really try to partner with parents. At the same time, I think that doesn't, it's an open door policy, but it's not like an everyday thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think the most successful players, I communicate with the parents and you know, provide feedback and vice versa. But the most successful players are not the parents that are calling me every week, you know. Yeah. It's the ones that we check in periodically to kind of do our best to stay on the same page, or when necessary, you know, kind of on an as needed basis. And that seems to be the most, as I do this longer, it has turned out to be kind of the most productive way to involve parents into the system, because they are a part of it. And they're an important part of it. So I think if feel like they know what our goals are and we can articulate to those goals to the parents, I think that's also very, very helpful. And then, you know, it just leads to a lot better relationship, less miscommunication, things like that. As far as, you know, their role leading up to college, I do think it's really important that everybody in the process keeps an open mind. I would tell people to explore more options than you think you should. You know, I think we find that a lot at Florida. Maybe it's a kid that's grown up in the state and their whole life they've been a Gator, and they, you know, the only place they've ever wanted to go is Florida. Of course, I appreciate that. And I want everyone to want to come to Florida. But I do think if you keep an open mind and you look other places and you encourage your child to do that, that's really when you're going to make the best and most informed decision. And certainly they play a big role in helping fit the pieces of the puzzle together, whether it's, you know, being realistic on playing time or what the scholarship needs to look like, how far away they want to be from home, all those types of factors. I think parents are really going to play a huge role in that. And so I just try to tell them to, you know, keep an open mind and ask good questions. I encourage parents to ask questions. We love it when the kids ask the questions, obviously, and do most of it. But I am not naive to think that parents aren't going to be involved in some capacity. I think they should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you said. I had a conversation with a parent last week or something where they felt like a coach maybe even a smaller program. They didn't even tell me which it was been talking to their daughter a good bit. And as soon as they discussed that they'd be coming on the visit with their daughter, the coach just really kind of cut off communication. And there could be other reasons. And I explained this to them, but I was like, that is definitely not a majority of things. You know, some coaches have allow parents to be a little more involved than others, but especially through the recruiting part of things, that yes, your daughter needs to be the one who leads and does majority of the stuff. But when it comes to that visit and the more serious parts of making the decision, I mean, parents have a right, I feel like, to know where their money's going, if they're having to invest money, who their daughter's going to be, you know, be with for the next 4 years. And I think coaches, you know, again, obviously there's two extremes to this. You get parents who are way too much, way too involved and do too much. But at the end of the day, like I said, I mean, the parents need to know where their daughters are going. And I tell them that it goes both ways, that a college coach needs to know where this kid's coming from and what kind of background are they coming from. I've had some parents say, well, we don't want to be involved. We don't want to go on the visit. And I'm like, well, if you're not going to be involved at all with them when they get to college, then maybe not. But if you plan to be involved, that coach probably wants to know a little bit of what they're getting into as far as the parents go. So it's a healthy balance there, I think, and finding, like I said, because again, while it needs to be the player's decision and they need to be the one taking the reins on this, they are still young kids who don't necessarily always know what's best and need, you know, like you said, their parents know them best, and they do in many ways. Again, there are not healthy situations of that for sure. Always got to throw that in there, I feel like. But in most cases, there are times where, like I said, the parents have a little more insight into the future and into where, you know, again, if they're investing money into their education of what might be the better opportunity and finding that balance between the parent, the player, and you as a coach to hopefully find what's going to be the best opportunity for that player without them just making that decision totally on their own, I think is such an important part of it. And again, unfortunately, you don't always see the balance equal itself out the right way sometimes. But, and then sometimes you just got to live and learn and let them make the mistakes and go from there. But I like to hear that, you know, the parents get a role in it. Again, I know there's probably a boundary and a limit there, but as long as you're open and honest and upfront with the goals and your philosophy and lay that down, then hopefully those parents all understand that and respect that. And at the end of the day, you are the coach and, you know, have the right as a coach to do what you want to do as well in that sense. So hopefully that's been a great experience. I know parents a lot of times do get some negative negative press, I guess, in a way, these days, because there are some, I mean, they were that way even when we went through. I mean, I know you probably know it. There were some stories. Yeah, I think it just has become a little more public. You hear the stories a little bit more, maybe just a little. Everybody's a little more stressed, a little more anxious, a little more information there than what we had when we were going through. But we had, you know, I know we had those same situations in junior golf and college golf, so that's not something new by any means.
Right. But you're right. I think you're looking for that balance. You know, you're looking for, and nobody's perfect, you know? So I think the understanding that, you know, parents are going to make mistakes in the process, that's okay. You know, I don't think the expectation is that people have to be perfect. And because as coaches, we would want that same leeway, you know, we're not always going to handle every situation perfect, but I think, we just try to communicate, you know, I think that's the biggest one. And just make sure that as much as possible, everybody's on the same page, player, parent, coach, and just do. And once we lay that foundation, it does seem to get easier as the child, you know, I call them child, player, whatever, as they get older, you know, in their 4 years, if we start good, we can really make some headway on that, to getting them to the place where they're, you know, pretty self-sufficient young women by the time they leave. So,
Yeah, that, and I know that's usually the ultimate goal. And we talked about that a little bit, of making sure when they leave, they are, like I said, self-sufficient, whether they're going out to play on tour or going into the real world, is they can't become too dependent on you as a coach and having everything that's laid out and dictated for them. Because then I was talking to Natalie Srinivasan on an episode earlier, and you know, she's kind of realizing that it's almost back to like junior golf days, where she dictates her schedule and what she does. And she's just, you know, I think it was a little bit of a, not a surprise, but obviously happened a little sooner than she expected, of, you know, having to go back to that. And, you know, a lot of your college experience helps know whether you're prepared for that, or if it's a big adjustment to go back to, you know, not having a coach tell you what to do and where to be.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can tell that difference. So very good. Very good. Well, any other, you know, things that you want to share, with, like I said, we have other coaches that I know listen in, and instructors and parents and players, a little bit of everybody out there. Anything else that, you might want to share as we get ready to wrap this up?
Oh, I just think, you know, kind of what we touched on earlier, I think my biggest thing is, you know, the fact that we're even, you know, talking about all this is awesome. Just the opportunities that are out there these days for young women, the growth of the game, I think, for young women is just something that is so neat. I know for, you know, just you're and I similar background. It's just so neat for me to see, and all the opportunities that are there, and just the experience of playing college golf. I just can't emphasize enough, how awesome it is. And I don't, you know, I say that through the lens of, you know, maybe where I went to school or the University of Florida, but I'm saying just in general, there's so many awesome opportunities at various divisions and on various teams. It's just something to really, I'm just so proud to be a small part of it. And I think that, I just hope that the people that listen to this and the people you help, Brandy, just are excited about that and what, you know, the possibilities are, not only from a golf standpoint, but just the opportunities and the doors that this opens, you know, professionally, personally, the character skills that you can build in an environment like this. It's just, it's something that I think the longer I do it, I just appreciate it more and more. And, it's just an honor to be able to talk about this stuff and, you know, highlight these opportunities that are there for young people.
Yes, I love that. And exactly kind of what you said, the more you do it, the more you kind of appreciate. I know I 100% have that. And I, you know, you can beat a dead horse with them, with the younger players, and want them to appreciate it and understand it and know that they're only going to grasp it to a degree. But if they at least get to experience it, that's at least one step into it. How much they take from it, there's only so much you can do to force that at that age, and everybody's maturity is different. But in hopes that it may be, I mean, for me, it was 10, 15 years past my college days that I really grasped what it meant and what that opportunity was. I definitely did not when I was going through it and didn't appreciate it and what I could have learned and how much more I could have done. So sometimes it's a little bit later for some than others, but like I said, if you don't get that experience, then you never get that chance to do it. So love that advice. Great way to wrap this up. And and call it a day on another great episode. And I really just appreciate you taking the time. I said, I know everybody's got a little more downtime than we wanted right now. I know it was not something anybody wants, but you know, try to make the most of it. And I appreciate your time and sharing with all those out there listening. Cause I know many people are looking for things to do. And like I said, everybody's trying to figure out ways to get better through all this and take advantage of this, this odd time that we're going through with some extra free time on our hands in some ways and different kind of schedule for everybody. So, thanks again. Appreciate it. And,
You're welcome.
enjoy the rest of, I can't say season or a year because, again, we're just whatever this is. But thank you again, and thanks for everybody out there for listening in on another episode. And stay tuned for more to come.